Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Best-selling author Hampton Sides returns with a tale of polar exploration and survival in the Gilded Age. His new book is In the Kingdom of Ice, The Grand and Terrible Voyage of the USS Jeannette. In the late 19th century, people were obsessed by one of the last unmapped areas of the globe, the North Pole. No one knew what existed beyond the fortress of ice rimming the northern oceans, although theories abounded. The foremost cartographer in the world believed that warm currents sustained a verdant island at the top of the world. National glory would fall to whoever could plant a flag upon its shores. And that brings us to the story in the Kingdom of Ice, and a great pleasure to welcome Hampton Sides to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. Great pleasure.
Good to be with you.
Very nice to have you here. What brought you to this particular story and to this man and this idea of ultimately finding this place?
Well, I had been to Norway, to Oslo, Norway, to an amazing place called the Fram Museum, which is devoted to the exploits of a man named Fridtjof Nansen, a Norwegian explorer who had tried to duplicate the voyage of the USS Jeannette, this American voyage. He talks about it repeatedly all over the museum. There's references to George DeLong and the Jeannette. I'm an American. This is an American voyage. He spoke of it as though everyone, of course, knows about it, has heard about it. I had never heard of it before. And so I just sort of filed that away and burrowed into the story, began to realize what a huge sensation it was in its day in the 1880s, and was struck by the fact that it had been almost completely forgotten. So great characters, great primary documents, and also an interesting time to revisit a tale that takes place largely in Russia and in the Arctic, where we're, of course, there's a lot of interest in the Arctic these days because of climate change. So for all those reasons, I decided to dig into this one. I spent about 4 years on it, and It's been a great joy.
You talk about this in the book, that one of the things that you had to do was sort of forget what you knew about the North Pole and go from there.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like it's very easy for us now to scoff at some of the crazy, seemingly crazy ideas that people had about what was up there, and to kind of scrape away all of that knowledge that we have now and go back to that time and try to realize that this problem, the polar problem, as it was called, was this nagging, gnawing obsession. People had to know what was up there. A lot of theorists had all kinds of notions, some of which went back to the Greeks and the Vikings and early maps and various tales from Arctic whalers. And, you know, there was just a jumble of misconceptions about what was up there. And I just wanted to try in the early stages of the book to recreate the environment of that time, to realize this was the great planetary enigma that had to be solved, and nations and scientists and various explorers who had huge ambitions all were united in this desire to know what was at the top of the world.
It is called in the book Arctic Fever, and I'm curious as to what caused that fever and ultimately how the USS Jeannette came to, in a way, symbolize the way of solving that problem and curing the fever.
Yeah. Well, it was a fever in several senses. One was the men themselves who ventured into the Arctic. Mostly at this point, they had tried to reach the North Pole via Greenland. These men tended to be obsessed with the Arctic and addicted to it. It's like they could not go back to civilization. they were happiest in the Arctic. And George DeLong was one of those guys. He couldn't get enough of the place. To his own surprise, it was just an infatuation with the atmosphere up there, with the this great puzzle of what's at the top of the world, and the way sound travels, the atmospheric phenomena. You'll find that even today, people who do studies in the Arctic, they either love it or they hate it. And they want to, those who love it want to keep going back. The USS Jeannette was an expedition that was really designed to test the theories of an open polar sea, a seemingly crazy notion now that was believed by many people, many scientists, that that there was an open warm water basin at the top of the world, and that if you could just smash through the ice, you would eventually find this body of water and have smooth sailing to the North Pole. So I know it sounds odd now, but at that time it was very widely believed, and the Jeannette was designed to test that theory. Unfortunately, as so often happens with Arctic exploration, men either have to die or suffer terribly in order to prove or disprove these kinds of theories because so little was known.
As I mentioned, the date is July 8, 1879. The USS Jeannette set sail from San Francisco. How long into the journey was it that the crew realized they were in trouble?
Well, it was actually very quickly. By September, they got locked in the ice. And this was, you know, after they had ventured through the Bering Strait, looking for this warm water current that was supposed to be there and was supposed to sweep north through the Bering Strait and under the ice. The theory was this warm water current, kind of a corollary to the Gulf Stream, would soften up the ice and create a kind of gateway that would lead to the open polar sea. By the end of September, they realized there was really no warm water current to speak of, and the ice was by no means a gateway. It was like cement. They were stuck, and they just began to drift helplessly in this ice pack for 2 years, and were never able to get free of the ice until finally in the summer of 1881, the ship succumbed to the enormous pressure of the ice pack and was crushed and sank to the bottom of the Arctic Ocean, leaving these 33 men and their 40 dogs out on the ice pack with nothing but a few belongings and their three whale boats to drag south towards the nearest landmass, which was the central coast of Siberia.
And at this point, it's survival. It's not searching for anything, right?
At this point, it's mainly survival. They have a few months to save themselves before winter comes on. They have to drag themselves over 1,000 miles over this ice pack to try to find open water. So yes, it's mainly becomes a tale of holding this expedition together, of survival, of fighting this fighting against the clock and against the lack of calories because they really don't have enough food, so they are constantly having to hunt as they move over the ice and, you know, dragging in harness all these belongings. However, along the way, they discover a number of islands, and one of which they explore and set foot on, and they were the first humans to ever explore this island called Bennett Island, which is named after the publisher who paid for this whole expedition. These islands are still known as the DeLong Islands. It's an archipelago in the high Arctic north of Siberia. So they did do some discovery along the way and claimed these islands for the United States, kind of licked their wounds on one of these islands and repaired their boats, and finally set sail across the Arctic Ocean for Siberia.
There are fascinating passages in the book, entries in Captain DeLong's journal, as well as letters from his wife, Emma. How did you come across this documentation?
Well, I had this experience early on in the research that was pretty remarkable. It's something that I think all historians dream about, which is this notion of, you know, finding a relative, a distant relative, who has a trunk full of letters in the attic that they don't know what to do with. Would you please come and take them off my hands, you know? And that's basically what happened. I tracked down a distant relative of the commander, George DeLong. This person's name was Catherine DeLong, and she had this trunk full of letters, and she wanted me to look at them and figure out, well, really, what were they? And it turned out to be the personal papers of Emma DeLong, George DeLong's wife. And they were just amazing letters, mainly letters, both letters that he had written her during their courtship days and letters also that she wrote him during the expedition. She sent them north via these Arctic whaling vessels in the hope that somehow, some way, they would reach him. They're beautiful letters. You know, people wrote so much better back in those days. I think there was certainly a lot more thought and care put into this correspondence. And they were just beautiful, elegantly written, and ultimately heartbreaking letters that she wrote with no idea whether they would ever reach him or not. And I end up using those letters a good bit in the last third of the book.
In having read you in the past, it's interesting that you are fascinated by these subjects of this group of people who are trying to survive and are trying and are working together on something, and also ultimately about failure.
Yeah, well, I mean, in a way, I think that how someone fails is often much more interesting than a pure triumph. How they rise to the occasion, how they pull together their resources and summon all their strength to survive. And I guess you would call this expedition a noble failure. They did not reach the North Pole, but they certainly discovered a lot of that part of the Arctic Ocean. They went across a part of the planet that had never been seen by man before. They held it together. They discovered islands along the way. They smashed all of these various theories that were obviously wrong. But then all of that sort of pivots halfway through the story, and it does become just a story of survival, holding it together against all the odds. And I guess it's a theme that I've returned to repeatedly. I wrote about the Bataan Death March and the survival of the prisoners of war in the Philippines during World War II. And, you know, what they had to do to pull it together to get through this ordeal. I guess there's kind of a universal appeal to these sorts of stories. We ask ourselves as we're reading them, you know, how would we survive? What would we do? Would we survive? Could we make it? Would we be able to call upon our own strength to get through this thing? And I think that that's certainly the case in this story. It becomes very much a story of leadership, camaraderie, teamwork, and sacrifices. These guys just struggle over this endless expanse of slush and rubble and these pressure ridges and just this impossible landscape as they are fighting for their lives.
Well, it's an incredible story and wonderfully told. It is In the Kingdom of Ice, the Grand and Terrible Polar Voyage of the USS Jeannette. It is published by Doubleday. Hampton Sides, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Again, the title of the book, In the Kingdom of Ice, published by Doubleday. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
The leading lights of the age all wondered amongst themselves what I would do next. After all that I'd found in my travels around the world, was there anything left? Gentlemen, I said, I've studied the maps, and if what I am thinking is right, there's another new world at the top of the world for whoever can break through the ice. I looked around the room, and that way I once had, and I saw that they wanted belief. So I said all I got are my guts and my God, then I paused, and the Annabelle leaves.